What are you doing wearing a suit to the studio again? First a tux, now a suit.
Well, you said the mayor's going to be here. I always love his honor. Got to pay his respects to the mayor, you young punk!
Well, no, it's not the mayor. Not the mayor of a town. It's Mayor McCall from one of the hottest new wrestling podcasts.
Mayor McCall? Mayor McCall? Didn't he play center field for the Phillies?
No, that's not him. He's a wrestling expert.
Wrestling?
Ah.
It's the outdated wrestling hour.
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Smith, formerly with Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And it's been a tumultuous couple of weeks here. Very good weeks, but very strange. Super strange. Let's just say in the last month, I've learned a lot about the wrestling business, the current state of the wrestling media. I put my fingers in the air, two quote marks, and a lot of other things having to do with podcasts and everything else. Am I getting burned out already? No, I wouldn't say I'm burned out. Am I getting world weary a little bit? Yeah, a little bit. Acquiring guests, making everybody happy, dealing with personalities, on it goes. It's like anything else. Anything else in life has its hills and valleys. But in any event, it's still worth it. I'm still having a blast. And we've had some wonderful guests and wonderful recent episodes, and I am really looking forward to tonight. As you guys know, I was with PWI for a long time, and everybody knows that I love the Memphis territory. No matter what it was called, the CWA, the USWA, Jerry Lawlerville, you know, whatever it was called, I really enjoyed it, no matter what the stage of it was. And there's a brand new wrestling podcast out now, hosted by a fellow who loves it more than I did, because he was there. I mean, he was in the territory. And you're going to find out all about him. And unlike other podcasters, I want you to go out and listen to the really good podcast. And this one's brand new. This podcast we're going to about to talk about has only been around since April. It's called Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. I've never heard anything quite like it. That's why I love it. You know, no cookie cutter here. This is a completely original, very heartfelt, old school wrestling podcast. And I want to get you to know that show and the guy behind it. So without further ado, let's have an interview with the one and only John McCall. I've been looking forward to this because thanks to the magic of social media. I've made a new friend lately, and he happened to have started a podcast, and I think his first edition was either late March, early April, and I went, wow. I really did. I was knocked out by the concept of it, by the presentation of it. The podcast is called Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall, and here is the mayor himself, John McCall. Hello, welcome.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing today? Thank you for having me on your podcast today. I've been looking very forward to it, very excited, and what a high honor. So thank you for having me.
Well, I'm as honored that you would appear here, and I'm really looking forward to speaking with you about something that I'm excited about, because as you know, in our conversations together, I'm a major fan of the Memphis wrestling scene. Back when I was with PWI, it was between about 1988 and 1995. And, I used to get the Memphis tapes. Memphis instantly became the favorite wrestling television program I ever saw. That was the CWA transition in the USWA time. And I fell in love with it instantly. Lance Russell, followed by Dave Brown, you know, Corey Macklin and Brian St. John, everybody who was involved with it. And one of my great pleasures was actually appearing on one of the shows. I believe it was in 1991 when Lawler was having a feud with Leatherface, if you remember that. And I felt, I love Memphis wrestling. So tell us your history, why you're doing the show. Just talk about anything you want about Memphis and why you started the podcast.
Well, I'd received a phone call from one of my oldest friends in the world. His name is Matt. And he said, man, have you ever thought about starting a podcast? And I was like, no, I hadn't. I was like, you know, what the hell would I talk about? And he said, man, talk about your favorite thing. Talk about wrestling. And so we, you know, I didn't really, Bob, I didn't think too much of it. And I just, you know, I kind of dismissed it. But, you know, I can't say for sure, but it was either the next day or the day after that, I just woke up and I said, hey, you know what? Life is short and we've got one life to live and let's make it count. Let's do something fun. Let's do something meaningful. And I just got it in my head from that point on just to start a wrestling podcast. And I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, well, what I want to narrow this down and what I want to talk about and focus on. And it hit me out of nowhere, like a ton of bricks, like, okay, Memphis wrestling. I've been a part of Memphis wrestling, you know, since my early childhood, being, you know, 8 or 9 years old, watching it every Saturday morning, going, you know, my dad taking me to, you know, the appearances and things around town, and going to the Coliseum, the Pipkin Building, and, you know, just those guys would be. So that's where I started at.
You mentioned the Pipkin Building. When I visited Memphis, they were running out of there at that point. And I kind of missed out on the Mid-South Coliseum. I don't know why they left the Mid-South. I think they went back to it after that. It was around 91 when I went there. But I remember the Pipkin Building. I really do.
And that's pretty cool, too, because our first ever guest was Downtown Bruno, WWE Harvey Wimpleman. And something I learned when he was on the show, we talked to him. And he was actually in charge of the Pipkin Building. That was his baby. He was the manager over that.
Amazing. I did not know that. Although I know at the time when I visited Memphis that Downtown Bruno was living basically with Jerry Lawler in another house that was on Jerry's property.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah, at that very time. And I had no idea. I said, he really? He said, yeah, that's where he's been living for a couple of years. Obviously, he's doing a lot better since then. Right. But he deserved it, too. He's a talented guy. And from what I understand, really cool fella.
I want to back up for a minute if I can too, though. You talked about your appearance in 91 on USWA wrestling. That was very cool. You're right. You were part of the Leatherface angle there. And if I'm not mistaken, you were there to present a picture to Jerry Lawler, a picture of himself, Sam Bass, which was his manager that was killed in a car wreck in 1976. And Jim White as well. So that was a really cool picture that you were there to present to the King.
Yeah, and Leatherface ran out and caused havoc. It was just a little nice interview. I was thrilled. The history of just being on that TV show was just overwhelming to me. I was knees knocking because I loved that show. I absolutely never missed an episode of that program. So to finally get to meet everybody and, you know, be on interview by Dave Brown, unreal. So anyway, here comes Leatherface, and he comes out, and listen, I'm not cool. You know, I love Memphis wrestling, but the monster angles used to get to me a little bit. So anyway, Leatherface comes out, he saws the desk, the announcer's desk. If you saw the tape, you've seen this. And then he took the end of his chainsaw and kind of smashed the glass on the front of the photo and ripped right through the photo.
Right, absolutely.
And I made a boo-boo with my company because that was the only copy of the photo we had.
Uh-oh.
It was. I understand that photo was really a publicity photo that they used back in the day, and they were more common than I thought, but it was in our photo file, and I wrecked the photo. I was supposed to bring it back to him. I swear to God, this is true. I was supposed to bring it back to the office. So in any event, that was the angle, but Jerry got the a nightstick from the attendant there at the studio and kind of ran Leatherface off when his chainsaw stopped working. Thankfully.
That was kind of cool for me because that was like the best of both worlds to me, because you know, Memphis wrestling was my favorite. And actually, the Texas Chainsaw, people that know me know that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is my all-time favorite scary movie. So that really worked for me.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'll tell you what, I got to, equally thrilling for me, I got to be on the Jerry Lawler show the next day. Do you remember that? The Jerry Lawler show on Sunday morning?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I got to attend not one but two cards. The Pickett Building, and I'll never forget that show. It just awesome. I mean, I got to stand in that ring, and then I got to take a car ride with the wrestlers. And does it sound like, did they promote in West Memphis, Arkansas?
Yeah, they promoted. They promoted all around.
And yeah, I think we went into Arkansas or Mississippi. I'm not sure which. My memory is, you know, 30 years. You know, but we went to one of the other cities. And saw another show there, and they had such a great roster at that point. Tony Anthony and the Dirty White Girl, Bill Dundee, Eric Embry had the book, Tojo Yamamoto, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Chris Candido, on and on it went. Oh, the tag team champions at that time were Jeff Jarrett and Robert Fuller. Fantastic. I mean, I had the time of my life for a whole week. That is my history. In Memphis. It was just 1 week, but memories lasted a lifetime, man. I never had more fun.
I could have ran into you as a kid and had no idea who you are, because I remember being at that that Pipka Building show with Leatherface there, because one of the things I visually remember is that actually when he came out there, the chainsaw had no chain on it. I mean, of course, they were running it with gas and all, but I guess to not hurt anybody or legality purposes or something, the actual chainsaw had no chain on it.
Well, you know what I didn't understand, in all seriousness? They ran that angle when I was there. I guess I don't remember if they ran that angle after or before the shows I saw, because the main event of the Pipkin Building was Lawler against Pritchard. Leatherface wasn't on either show. So I'm trying to figure out how that all worked out in the history of, you know, when the match between Lawler and Leatherface took place. I don't remember, you know, but I do remember that the main event was Tom Pritchard, Dr. Tom, against Jerry Lawler. So I'm a little confused in my mental, you know, I can't figure out why that was what I saw when they were promoting Leatherface so heavily.
So, well, but I think the deal with that was, of course, Eric Embry and Dr. Tom Pritchard, you know, they had their team and stable, and they were there, taking on Lawler. So that's kind of where they went with that. Eric Embry had actually, brought in Leatherface, to do a number on Lawler. So I think they had a couple. I know for a fact they had, at least one or two matches with Leatherface against Lawler, but I don't think they ever really made that the main event, though. It would be on the card while Lawler, like you said, was wrestling Dr. Tom. And actually, I've got a poster here that I've got from Memphis wrestling historian Mark James, and Leatherface is going against Lawler, and on that same card, Lawler's actually going against Eric Embry. So it was almost like Leatherface was like a stub angle of the main angle with Eric Embry, Dr. Tom Lawler.
Interesting. Interesting. And there was a great tag team rivalries going at that point. I believe it was around that time that it was Fuller and Jarrett against the Moondogs. And those matches were white hot.
Yes, they were phenomenal. The Moondogs would throw down.
Yeah. And you know, our feud of the year in PWI, I think one of those years was, Jarrett Lawler against the Moondogs. And that was legit, man. That was really how our vote count went. That was the most, or for feud of the year, they called it. And that was what won legit, man. That's how hot that feud was.
And somebody that, you know, that doesn't get enough credit that I like to keep the memory alive and talk about, and is the manager of the Moondogs, Richard Lee.
Richard Lee. Mm-hmm.
Great, great heel manager. He really was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was.
It worked, I mean, and that was a perfect pairing. They needed a mouthpiece, you know.
They did, and he, especially as a kid growing up watching it, you know, you could believe that he could control the Moondogs with the blow of that whistle.
Yes,
and he was a great, great, you know, on screen, you know, heel, you know, manager persona. He could talk, and he had that passion that came through, and to me, he was like a, you know, I equate this to like a Jim Ross. I remember, you know, watching, you know, Richard Lee, you know, talk on, you know, Channel 5 Wrestling, and everything that came out of his mouth, I'm just hanging on to it. I'm you know, it's very believable. I'm like, oh yeah, he really does hate, you know, Jerry Lawler and Jeff Jarrett and referee Frank Morrell. He thinks they're some stinking cheaters.
Well, I got to tell you, that version of the Moondogs, if they weren't hardcore, they were an inch away from it. Because the TV matches against jobbers, they would absolutely wreck the guys and beat them over the back with chairs to the point where they were covered with welts. I'm sure you remember that.
Well, and, you know, we talked about, you know, the journey I'm on, you know, the journey I'm on with the podcast and with the show and all. So, you know, talking to, you know, different people and doing my homework and research and seeing different, you know, articles and reports out there. A lot of guys did not like working with the Moondogs. I mean, what you saw on TV is kind of what you got. I mean, they were known as being very rough, very stiff. And, you know, I'm not going to say any names, but there's been some Memphis wrestlers out there that's been quoted as saying that, you know, they didn't like working with the Moondogs just because they thought they were just, you know, reckless, you know, and just, you know, not as careful as they should have been. So I think it's like, you know, you used to see, you know, hear the guys talking about like showing up for TV and looking at your name on the card and seeing you're wrestling the Road Warriors and like, oh, hell no, not tonight. Or, you know, the different parts of the territory, when you'd get there and see you're wrestling the Moondogs, you're like, oh, who did I piss off tonight? Why don't we got to wrestle the Moondogs?
Yeah, I get that. I do. Well, you know, behind every rough angle is a promoter. You know, I'm sure, you know, Mr. Jarrett and Eric, who, by the way, I have nothing but major admiration for Eric Embry. I thought he did an incredible job both in Memphis and in Texas. He deserves more plaudits for the work he did in both areas. He really was unique, and he really did put out some really excellent programs. He really did.
I had the pleasure of having about a 10-minute phone call with him about 3 weeks ago, and I really enjoyed, you know, talking to Eric. He told me some cool stuff and some cool stories, and I was thankful and honored that I, you know, got to talk to Eric Embry.
Well, that was the one. I'll tell you what, the two people I got to talk to extensively when I was in Memphis. One was Eric. It was just kind of, as the show was winding down, I had my notebook with me and I was writing stuff down. And he's sitting across, you know, this little locker room area, and he goes, "Hey, handsome, how you doing?" I said, "Great. This has been a great show." And he said, "Come on over." And we talked wrestling psychology for like 20 minutes. It was awesome. You know, he talked to me about the fight that Memphis had in, you know, gaining eyeballs because, you know, everything was, it was a WWF expansion, you know, they didn't want to be known as number two in Memphis. They wanted to be number one. And it was always kind of a struggle at that point because, you know, WWF was encroaching all the time. So it was interesting to find out their take on staying relevant and what was becoming a WWF world in that point. And the second person was Eddie Marlin. Eddie Marlin, first of all, he knew where I was, which shocked me. And secondly, he was just the friendliest, nicest, coolest guy you could ever imagine. Eddie was a big part of the behind the scenes there, as well as being, I think, the commissioner, I think, on screen at that point. But yeah, Eddie did everything from being the commissioner to stacking chairs after B shows. Seriously.
We had the pleasure of having Randy Hales on the show, and we got to learn a lot about Eddie Marlin. Eddie Marlin was the father-in-law of Jerry Jarrett. So
I did not know that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I've got the pleasure of meeting Eddie several times back in the day, as you know, my younger day. And Eddie always was nothing but a very, very, very cool, nice guy. And, you know, I equate him to like a Lance Russell, nothing but a class act.
Oh, Lance Russell. Here we go. On my previous podcast and this one, I have dubbed Lance Russell the Vin Scully of wrestling. You know how Vin Scully was around forever and made you feel like he was talking directly to you, the listener? That's how I feel about Lance Russell. How about what's your take on that?
I think Lance Russell, I'll just go on, you know, I'll go on record, you know, and say today, Lance Russell is the greatest wrestling announcer, commentator the world has ever seen. Lance had so much going for him. It wasn't just the verbiage. it wasn't just the quick wit to carry on the show and keep everything going. But, you know, Lance was there, you know, for multiple purposes too. And Lance was there to, you know, help play out some of the angles and things like that. And Lance had the power over the audience. If Lance told you something, you believed it. If Lance Voucher, you know, stood up for a guy, you stood up for him too. If Lance didn't like the guy, you didn't like the guy either. Lance was the king also of using, you know, his mannerisms and some of his looks just to sell some of those angles. And something that will be instilled in my mind for the rest of my life, and I think he should have won an Oscar for this, would be something that sticks in my mind was the Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert angle, where they'd come out there and went back and forth, and, you know, Tommy Rich had attacked, Eddie Gilbert, you know, a bloody mess. And Eddie comes back out there and says, you know, "Hey, Tommy, I've seen the error of my ways. I was wrong. You know, it's been my fault. You know, I want to make up. I want to get our team back together." And, you know, of course, you know, Tommy went for it or whatever. So as they're walking out of the studio, the camera cuts to Lance, and Eddie Gilbert had hit Tommy Rich with a steel chair, but the camera did not go to that scene first. The camera cuts over to Lance Russell, and I will never forget, Lance Russell looks like he had just legit lost his mother or like a family member or something. Like the wind had been knocked out of him. It was just, I will always remember that image of Lance just looking so lost. You know, when Eddie Gilbert, you know, reattacks, you know, Tommy after everyone thought they had made up and everything was going to be okay. And Lance, just to me, that made it so believable, that for the look on Lance's face. And I'll never forget that.
You know, people say, well, wrestling's a work or whatever verbiage they use. Lance Russell never worked anybody. Lance Russell told the truth. Everything that ever came out of his mouth. That's why people loved him, because he wasn't trying to put stuff over on the fans. He was talking directly to them all the time. And what came out of his mouth was how he felt. He wasn't feigning outrage. He was outraged. When he got outraged on this show, he was really mad or disappointed or disgusted, whatever it may be. He wasn't faking it.
Right.
Do you agree with that take on things, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Lance could make you feel, you know, what he was, you know, feeling on the inside, and just looking, you know, you look at it totally different as you get a little bit older, or you just look at past footage. I mean, Lance was just, you never watching it as a kid or just growing up, you're like, okay, Lance and Dave are the announcers. You know, everybody plays their part. You know, you got the wrestlers, the referee, the audience, you know, the backstage people, and Lance and Dave, you know, they're just the announcers. But no, they, you know, looking back, Lance and Dave were just an integral piece of that puzzle. And they made everything, you know, just come together. And speaking of Lance Russell, I had a big honor and pleasure this past week. Shane Russell was one of our guests, and he actually came to town and took him and Willie B and I, we met for lunch and got to spend some time with Shane this week. So that was really, really cool.
Oh, that's excellent. That's great. And let me ask you a question about that period we were just talking about. Kind of out of nowhere, Lance left Memphis to join WCW.
Correct.
Or NWA, whatever it was called at that point. I know it shocked a lot of people, but I know it was kind of an offer that Lance couldn't refuse.
Right.
He just couldn't. I mean, it made financial sense. It probably set him for the rest of his life, you know. He had to go. What was the reaction from the Memphis wrestling fans when that happened?
Well, of course, it was, you know, heartbreaking or whatever. You know, especially to a lot of the older fans, you know, that, you know, the wrestling here in Memphis started on Channel 13, then moved, you know, had moved over to, you know, Channel 5. But no, you know, just like, you know, Jerry Lawler and Jackie Fargo and Tojo Yamamoto and those guys. I mean, they, you know, when you thought of Memphis wrestling, you thought of those guys. And when you thought of Lance Russell, you thought of Memphis wrestling. It's like, you know, losing, you know, losing one of the family members, or, you know, I'll maybe equate it to this, you know, like say, if you're a big fan of the, you know, the TV program, like the A-Team, you know, you had the group and, you know, one of them, you know, leaves to go do something else. It's just, it's not the same anymore. It's not the original group. So, yeah, they made the transition, you know, Dave Brown and Corey Macklin, they did fine, you know, and they were a great announced team. It's just, you know, Lance was a staple here, and he was a true class act and a Southern legend, and people were very sad about losing Lance. But I think people also understood, I think it was one of those things too, where they didn't want Lance to be held back either, because, you know, like you talked about the financial aspect of, you know, Lance going to the, you know, the WCW at that time, or the NWA, or what, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, it was a good financial move, but also, you know, the world didn't know Lance Russell. Everybody in this, you know, this area and territory, you know, knew Lance, but I'm sure people were excited too to see Lance go on a bigger stage, you know, to showcase, you know, who he really was and get more exposure, so people, you know, could see the big deal about Lance Russell and what everybody here in Memphis saw.
Well, the one thing that disappointed me about the way that the NWA used Lance, they put him on one of the syndicated shows, and that was just about it. And I think he deserved a bigger role than that personally.
Absolutely. We had talked to Shane about that, and it just didn't, you know, things didn't pan out or turn out like they were, you know, that they should have. Lance wasn't used in the right capacity. And that's the bottom line. Lance just wasn't used in the right capacity.
I agree with that totally. But I do want to give a shout out and applause to Dave Brown too. Dave was great. Dave was really good. Again, another guy who wasn't, you know, soft soaping. He wasn't acting. He was who he was. And, you know, he was a legitimate journalist who just happened to love wrestling, and it showed on every show he did. And I was the biggest fan of Dave Brown too.
And I was too. Dave Brown is just, you know, Dave Brown is just awesome. He was always our local, you know, weatherman here too. So, you know, we depended on Dave for our weather and everything like that. But, you know, I think Dave, you know, he had his own tools. I mean, Dave was very intelligent. Dave was, you know, just an awesome guy. And you take everything that Dave already had and you pair him with Lance Russell, and Lance Russell being the teacher and Dave Brown being the student. I just think it was like the ultimate, you know, combination. I don't know if you'll ever have two announcers ever in the history of wrestling just to, you know, to be that good again. And some people might argue with that, you know, but hey, this is, you know, I represent Memphis, Tennessee, and this is what I know and love. And of course, I'm not oblivious to anything else that goes on in, you know, the country, you know, past or present. But, you know, in my book, it's damn hard to beat Lance Russell and Dave Brown.
Listen, I'm a New Yorker, okay? I consider the Memphis Studio Wrestling Show the greatest TV wrestling show of all time, and nothing's even close. I'm what? Serious. It was the most realistic. It had the most rabid fans. It had a feel unlike any other wrestling show you would watch. I mean, if you looked at those stands in the TV studios, you had kids and old people. You know, it was a big part of the city of Memphis. And people loved that show, and they loved those wrestlers, and you could feel it when you walked in there. I've never had that feeling anywhere else I've ever gone. To me, it was the best, case closed, end of story. I really feel that way.
Well, you know, as a young, you know, young male, you know, the wrestlers were our superhero. It was our comic book and superheroes coming to life. And we would get to, you know, be up close and personal and interact with those guys. And it was just, the words really can't describe it. I really can't. It was just the most incredible feeling. It was just, and a lot of those guys in Memphis, they acted so nice and so cool, you know, whether they were a face or a heel when the camera wasn't rolling. And, you know, maybe that stemmed down, you know, from the Jarretts or, you know, Lawler or whoever else, but everybody was always, you know, treated with respect. The fan, you know, if you're a fan of Memphis wrestling, they made you feel important. made you feel welcome. And, you know, you just wasn't a face in the crowd. I mean, especially when, you know, if Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, any of those guys were making an appearance, you know, I mean, you look on the internet these days and, you know, I won't name any names or anything, but you see some of these virtual signings, you see some of these Comic Cons, these meet and greets, and some of the, you look at some of the guys and clearly they're there just to, you know, get a check or, you know, go through the motions and all. But, you know, Memphis wrestlers, you know, in my personal experience were never like that ever. They were happy to see the fans. They were happy to interact. They were happy to tell stories, to joke around. And they really understood the appreciation that they should have for the fans. And we all felt like that. And it was just, like I said, it's a feeling that you really can't describe, because it's like getting to see your comic book hero or a superhero coming to life. And, you know, they're sitting there mentioning your name, having a conversation with you and taking a picture, and don't act like you're bothering them, or they act like that they're glad that you're there. So great, great memories.
And, you know, let's not forget Mr. Jerry Jarrett too, because, you know, I got to have a nice conversation with him when I went down there. And these are the people who lived and breathed the sport. And when he died earlier this year, I just winged a show. It wasn't part of my regular Friday lineup. I just recorded a show in tribute to both him and Jerry Lawler, who had, you know, his health problem at the same time. And I just kind of let loose on that 20-minute show. I just needed to express how important I thought that Mr. Jarrett's death was, because that's another voice of traditional professional wrestling that we've lost. And every time we lose another one of those voices, it weakens the infrastructure of the sport as a whole. You know, it's these people were really important in teaching wrestling psychology to the younger people. You know, I'm not talking about who they put on a card. I'm talking about teaching the tenets of what makes great professional wrestling, and how to draw people, how to get people to buy tickets, how to do a feud, how to present a TV show. And these people are becoming less and less all the time. And it hurts. So when Mr. Jarrett left us, I really felt it. I'm sure the whole city of Memphis did at that point too.
You know, Jerry Jarrett, you know, just aside the fact that, you know, just a great, likable guy, you know, of course was a, you know, wonderful, you know, booker and promoter, but man, just, you know, a lot of people, you know, might not equate it to that, but if you think about it, Jerry Jarrett was a creative genius. To keep those angles and feuds and things going like they did, and having to come up with something every single week on TV, or a new concept, you know, a new draw at the Mid-South Coliseum, and a draw like they did for so long. That's just, to me, that's just a testament of how much Jerry Jarrett was just a creative genius. I mean, I know that, you know, of course, you know, the president has a council and, a cabinet, and, you know, and other people have, you know, their support system. And I know he had his own support system, but, you know, just Jerry Jarrett was a creative genius. He was.
Absolutely agree. And, you know, we've gone this long without even mentioning Jerry Lawler. I mean, what? I can't think of another person in a territory who kind of led a territory for as long as he did, kept it going. I mean, Memphis kept going long after most independent territories were gone. You know, even after the promotion changed hands and they just kept it going, Jerry Lawler continued to draw people and get people interested in what was going on locally. In addition to him going national and becoming a major star in the WWF, I don't know what to say other than, if he's not listed in the top five of all-time wrestling greats, I don't know who should be.
I've said many times on my show, Jerry Lawler is the greatest professional ever. Jerry Lawler is the greatest professional wrestler to ever live. I mean, he's number one in my book. Of course, you know, I'm what I do and where I grew up at, and, you know, of course I'm biased, but, you know, I think I have a lot of facts and objectives. I can make that point. I mean, he's just, look how well-rounded he is. I mean, he's a great performer. He's a great heel. He's a great face. He's a great booker. He's a great promoter. He's a great commentator. He's a great artist. I mean, he's a great mentor. He's a great teacher. And And furthermore, he's the dad of my favorite professional wrestler ever, Brian Christopher.
Okay. That's nice. Listen, I'm still indebted to Jerry for when I did come to Memphis. We spent a lot of time together. And he had no caste system. You know, we had gotten to know each other through some, even when he was working Memphis as the champion in that era, he would work a lot of shows on the East Coast just independently. You know, he always traveled the country.
Right.
And that's where I got to know him. I think in Philadelphia, I had a lot of conversations with him. We hit it off pretty well. So that's how I got to be on all those TV shows. I said, I'm going to take a wrestling vacation because I wanted to take a week off from, you know, the job. I want to come to Memphis. Can I get passes to cover a couple of shows? He said, well, why don't you just come on TV? It was just like that. It was just that simple. Because we'll run an angle with you. We'll come up with something for you to do. And he didn't have to do that. But that's who Jerry Lawler was. You know, he understood the business. I think he wanted to get a little more publicity in the magazines too. But the fact is, he was the most wonderful regular guy of any superstar I ever met. I don't know if that makes any sense. You know, he was approachable. He was funny. He's just a very unique individual. And I'm hoping he's feeling good these days. Do you have any news on how he's doing?
I watched the Randy Hale show a couple days ago, and actually Randy and Jerry went out and had to grab some food and everything. Jerry drove, according to Randy, he was doing great. So that I text Randy and I was like, you know, I said, it was really cool to, you know, to hear you say that you went out with the King, you know, and he texted me back and he said, well, the most important part was that Jerry had a great time. And I said, absolutely. So far as I know, I mean, you know, I hear different things. I mean, I've been pretty connected since I started. I mean, I get messages saying he's not doing good, messages he's doing good and all. I think Jerry, I don't think he's anywhere near 100% right now, but I think he's doing great, you know, for considering what happened. And I think he's on the road to recovery, and hopefully everything will be, you know, okay with the King of Wrestling, Jerry Lawler.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it would unnerve me when he got sick, when he had his problem. He had just a couple of weeks ago, maybe less than a month, was on social media saying he was taking part in a match. This is my 53rd year in the ring. And then boom, this news hit. And I'm like, oh man, you know, it's like, knock me for a loop. And because like you say, all those memories come flooding back. And of course he had the heart attack on television and all this other problem. So when it's something like this happens, you hope it didn't double down on any health, you know, problems he may have had. But the fact that now he's going out with people and getting involved with things again, it's just very heartening. And I hope it continues. I hope he gets 100% back to normal, because King, we need you, man. We still need you.
Absolutely. It's not time to ring the bell yet. That strap needs to come down one more time, baby.
I'm totally in agreement with you, man. Absolutely. Wow, what great conversation this is. I am having goosebumps just talking about these stars. But let's talk about you. Let's talk about your show. Again, it's called Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. And tell us about your co-host, your show, what you're trying to achieve, where people can hear it. Give us the whole rundown, because I want people to go and listen.
All right, cool. And I appreciate that plug, Bob. Of course, I'm the mayor. I go by the mayor, Mayor McCall. My name is John McCall. You can find me on Facebook, social media. The show is, as Bob said, is Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. I have a really, really awesome co-host, Willie B. Willie B is a true, true hero to all of us. Willie B is a Purple Heart hero. He lost both of his legs in Iraq in 2005. So Willie B came back with no legs, you know, for our country, and made that sacrifice. And, you know, there's no reason to feel sorry for Willie B. He's one of the most physically, mentally tough people I've ever met in my life. And he's damn good at what he does. I compare him to like a, you know, a Tony Schiavone or somebody like that. He's the more, he's probably the more refined, crisp one on the show. And he's very, very, very knowledgeable. So what we've done, we have started out covering Memphis wrestling. We've had some, really good guests. We've had, Downtown Bruno, Randy Hales, Handsome Jimmy Valiant, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Jerry Calhoun, the legendary Memphis Territory referee. We've had Shane Russell, the son of the great Lance Russell, Tommy Wirefire Rich. I've recorded some others that I haven't, you know, released yet, and I'm working on some, you know, things with some other people, and we've got some nice surprises coming soon. But our goal is we just, you know, we're trying to keep the memories of the Memphis Territory alive, talking to some of these guests, and, you know, just reliving the past, keeping the memories alive, and, you know, just honoring the Memphis Territory. Can't say that, you know, I'll always, you know, cover the Memphis Territory. Might, you know, expand later on in a more broad horizon, cover, you know, different aspects of wrestling, but, you know, that's, you know, to be determined at a later time, later date. We'll see, you know, where the yellow brick road takes us. But right now we're covering Memphis, and we're loving it. And there's a lot of stuff left to, you know, cover with Memphis. And I think too, though, I was talking to Willie B. I think I want to do some shows without having, you know, some concepts, with not, you know, every show not having a guest, you know, just talking about, you know, different topics, maybe like, you know, Jimmy Hart, the First Family, you know, just the Memphis Mafia, that stable, just, you know, some different, you know, different concepts, and honor some, you know, some of the stars that are, you know, no longer with us and stuff like that. So big things in store, and we're excited, and we'll see how everything goes.
Well, you know, I'm excited too. I really am, because, you know, between the Gulas and Jarrett territories, there is such a long and rich history. Angle after angle, superstar after superstar, everybody passed through Memphis. I mean, everybody did. So you have an opportunity to dig up stuff that I think a lot of people won't know once they hear the podcast. That's a big deal to me, because you know what? That's wrestling tradition. That's wrestling history. That's the best of pro wrestling. And if you focus on some of these things, I'm never going to miss a show.
Well, it's funny, and we so appreciate that. You don't know how much that means coming from you, Bob. But you're I don't know if you know what people think, but in my book, you're a big deal, Bob. And I was totally honored to you know, and to come on this show today. It's funny what you said too, that, you know, digging up a lot of things, and people listening, you know, might not know some stuff. I mean, the old saying is never. You know, never get complacent, always keep learning, keep growing. Hell, there's a lot of stuff I didn't know that I discover when I'm doing this research. So it's like, you know, even though I'm digging into the past with things I think I'm very familiar with or what I know, yeah, I found out that I know some of it, that I'm familiar with some of it, but there's a lot bigger, you know, pieces of the puzzle and different intricacies that I had no idea about. So it makes it definitely interesting for me. It's not boring one bit, because I'm always discovering or rediscovering something that I didn't know. And that makes it cool and interesting for me, and makes me try to be the best I can be.
Well, you know, the reason I was so excited about all this is, you know, I kind of got very lucky to get hired by the company that did PWI. Very lucky. I was a small town sports editor. I mean, that was my last major job before coming into the New York City area. You know, but I happened to be a small town sports editor in the town where Mike Tyson was.
Oh, wow.
I was Catskill, New York. So I covered a lot of his. I ended up stringing for the Associated Press quotes and stuff like that. And it kind of built my name up a little bit. And then I won an award for an interview I did with Tyson. There is no better resume fodder for a sports magazine than a major journalism award about Mike Tyson when he was hot.
Absolutely not.
You know, and so I went in, I sent my resume in, I found a two-line classified ad in the New York Times that they needed a writer/editor, and I could tell who the company was. Didn't say who it was, but since it said RVC, I knew that was Rockville Center. That's where they published, you know, the magazines. So I fluked into it. I was one lucky guy, but I'm even luckier in the fact that I discovered Memphis wrestling right then and there, and had an opportunity to get my fingernails dirty and really get into it. And now somebody like you comes along and is going to do the same thing, looking back on it. Oh, baby, I'm so happy.
Well, it means so much to have, you know, your support and all like that. Cause I don't think that everybody's probably fond of what I'm doing. I'm the new guy. I just arrived, and, you know, and Memphis has such a rich, you know, tradition and things like that. So,
let me jump in. Why would anybody be upset with what you're doing? I don't get it.
Well, there's just a lot of, you know, I'm not going to really get into a lot of it, but there's a lot of, you know, I don't know what you experienced on your end, you know, having a show and, you know, doing what you do and being a podcaster and all, but there's a lot of jealousy of different people. I mean, you know, different wrestlers can be, you know, different, you know, jealous of each other. You can have, you know, conflicting opinions about different guests you're going to have along the way, different podcasters are gonna be jealous, you know, things like that. So, you know, you gotta take the good with the bad, but, you know, I'm gonna do the best I can with it. And, you know, and I do this for the fans, and I do this for the boys, you know, to keep these memories alive and keep everything relevant. So, you know,
there was an 800-pound gorilla in the room when I started this, you know, because I was on another podcast that I had just left. The reason I started this podcast is because when I left the other podcast, my email box and my Twitter and my Facebook filled up with people saying, "Where are you? Where'd you go?" Right? That inspired me to start this in January, because it's like, well, if these people really feel that way, give it a shot. You know, it's not like I'm coming in cold. They've heard me before. So I had the opportunity to work with the John and Rizzi podcast, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And I figured, why don't I just parlay that into my own thing? And you know what? It has exceeded my expectations tenfold. And if people don't like it, switch it off. You know, that's my opinion. If you don't want to hear the old school stuff, you don't want to hear us complain once in a while about something stupid that the current wrestling is doing, don't listen. But in the meantime, I have found there is a sub audience of veteran wrestling fans who miss the style, miss the feel, miss their old TV shows, miss their favorite stars. That ain't going away. And you know what? When I do this show, I feel like I'm 50 years younger. I feel like I'm the kid buying the ticket at my local armory to go see professional wrestling, and it feels great. I don't know how you feel when you do the show, but to me, this is like a new lease on life.
Oh, I'll give you an interesting fact. What I'm actually doing right now, when I do the show, I'm actually sitting in an actual seat from chair from the Mid-South Coliseum.
That's great.
I've constructed a studio here. You know, we're all audio and all, but, you know, when we're doing this, we definitely have some cool visuals and things like that. So yeah, it takes me back in a place when the world was still good, if that makes sense, without me elaborating on that.
I understand you 100%, my friend, 100%. You get to escape that and dive into something that made a lot of people happy. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
Well, I had no idea this thing was going to take off and blow up like it did. I mean, I thought we're just doing like a homegrown podcast or whatever, but just the reaction from people was just comical. I had no idea, you know, that people, you know, still loved, you know, Memphis wrestling and everything like they did. And boy, sure, I was wrong. I didn't gauge that right. I had no idea that we would get the attention or the support that we've had along the way. And it's just been overwhelming. And it's been a beautiful journey, man. And it gets, like you said, it just takes me back to a certain spot in my life, a certain euphoria that I just, you know, that I never want to forget. And it's my happy place, man.
Well, let me ask you one professional question from one podcaster to another. You're starting out white hot with the guests you're getting. Were you known on the wrestling scene in Memphis? Because you're getting A-list guests right off the bat. And I'm impressed.
No, I get that question a lot. And man, and I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to blow you off, or I'm not trying to avoid the question. But the best and the most honest answer I can give you, Bob, is thank you to the good Lord himself. I've just been blessed. I mean, I really have. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. I mean, of course, I mean, when you get the first couple guests under your belt, then people start taking notice. I mean, then you get a bigger fan base, you get a bigger audience, and then, you know, people want to do your show. And, you know, especially if they're promoting something, or they, you know, want to, you know, get some bookings or something like that. I mean, why not mess with a guy that's, you know, semi-hot and has a buzz, of course. But no, like I knew this guy for like well over 20 years that's known Downtown Bruno. And, you know, like I told you, I just, when after my buddy talked about starting the wrestling podcast that day after the, or the day after that, the next day or the day after that, you know, I just a couple days around that time. I mean, I didn't have a studio. I didn't have equipment. I had no idea what podcasting entailed, but I made a call to a guy named Jonathan Hearn and I said, "Hey, I want to start a wrestling podcast. Can you hook me up with Downtown Bruno?" And he's been like best friends with Bruno for like years. They're very close. And he opened up that door for me and, you know, had a couple conversations on the phone with Downtown Bruno. And, you know, he asked me, you know, what I was about, what I'm trying to accomplish, you know, what, you know, just kind of, we went from there. And, you know, he said, Jonathan vouched for you. And he said, I don't really know anything about you, but if Jonathan says you're a good guy in my book too. And I'm gonna give y'all a chance. So Bruno just, you know, Bruno opened the door for me. And, you know, after that, I contacted Randy Hales and Randy Hales, you know, gave me the green light. So I started off with, you know, two of the best big brothers in Memphis wrestling as you could find, Downtown Bruno, and Randy Hales. And, you know, the rest, they say the rest has just been history.
And a good start, a really tremendous start, my friend. And I am an instant fan. I will continue to listen. I'm going to continue to tell people to go to hear your show. There's one thing about the classic wrestling community. We're not competing against each other. We're a community. And I think that we need each other to help get the word out. Keep the spirit going. And maybe today's promoters will realize what's going on, bubbling under the scene, and go, you know what? Let's look back and see how they did things years ago. Let's emulate what was famous for, you know, 50 years instead of trying to reinvent the wheel every 5 months, you know? So I think that we're doing a public service. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Well, I think it's so refreshing for me to hear somebody, you know, say that, because that's the thing. There's, you know, I'm not here to compete with anybody. The only person I compete with is myself. I want to be the best I can be. I want to do the best I can do. And I don't worry about anybody else, and anybody else shouldn't worry about me either, because I'm not here to compete. I'm here to do my own thing. I'm here to keep the memories alive. I'm here to support, you know, to support the guest. And I'm not here to step on anybody's toes. But if I do, then, you know, excuse me, sir, pardon me, didn't mean to do it, but it is what it is. But I'm not here to compete. And I think that I think you hit the nail on the head. We're a wrestling community, and we should all stick together. We should help each other cross promote. We should help, you know, because we're doing this for the fans. It's just like the wrestling business itself. Without an audience, without fans, you have no show. I have no show. We're just talking in the forest, you know, with a bunch of trees and an echo and nobody to talk back. So that's very, very important for the wrestling community to stick together. And speaking of that, I would like to formally offer you an invitation to be on Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall as one of our guests. We would love to have you, Bob.
Well, you can count on it, because I'd be honored. And I feel the same way. And I'm really thankful that you came on my show. I'm really proud of this one. I'm as a Memphis junkie like I am, I couldn't have more fun. So thank you, Mayor McCall, not only for appearing on the show, but for your wonderful podcast that I'm going to tell all my listeners to go out and listen to as well. It's available everywhere you get your podcasts. It's not hard to find. Find this gentleman on Facebook, as he described earlier. Get involved, because this, if you're interested in Memphis wrestling, this is the place.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today, Bob. I've been super excited about it, and this is very, very high honor for me, you know, to be able to come on your show. And I'm just one more thing, you know, in this journey. I mean, getting to do your podcast has definitely, you know, been a bucket list for me. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh man, people tell me stuff like this and it knocks me out. It really does, because it's like, I may have been in PWI and all those wrestling magazines. I'm just a fan. I'm a glorified fan, you know. Just like everybody else is. It's like, this is a pleasure. And you folks will have a lot of pleasure listening to Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. Thanks again for being here, man.
Thank you again for having me.
Okay, Outdated Wrestling Hour fans, I think you know the drill by now, don't you? I'm sure that you do. Write to us, outdatedwrestling@gmail. Our website, outdatedwrestlinghour.buzzsprout.com. All of our episodes are there. So if you don't like apps, it's the place to go. Of course, we're available everywhere you can think of. Apple Music, Spotify, Google. Even a thing called Samsung News. That's where we're at. We're everywhere. Podbay, you name it, we're there. Podbean. Orson Bean. I'm sorry, I'm showing my age. So in any event, you know where to find us. You know what's been going on. Thank you once again, Mayor McCall. What a great guy. And what a Memphis wrestling expert. Love the experts, man. You can't beat him with a stick. So in any event, I'm heading up the old Mosey Road like the coyote in the Droopy Dog cartoon because I am tired. We have done 4 interviews in 6 days. I'm taking a little break, a little vacation. And when I get back, we'll continue to move ahead with the Outdated Wrestling Hour. Just remember, we're still at every Friday. We may change the release date of the shows to Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm not sure yet, but we're pondering it right now just because of personal reasons. Any event, hey, I got an idea. Shh, I got an idea. Listen to me. Do me a little favor, will you? Okay? Unlike today's indie wrestlers and AEW wrestlers, please take care of yourselves, all right?